You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast where we talk about all of Major League Baseball, yes, even during a pandemic. And I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. On today's episode, which is being dropped on the 10th day of April 2020, we will be replaying the 2001 World Series if it had been indeed played between the real-life World Series champion Arizona Diamondbacks and the team that was the best team in baseball that year, the 116-win Seattle Mariners. This show is available on the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available on all the platforms where you get your podcasts. We can be found on Twitter at LockedOnMLB_net. We're at Instagram at LockedOnMLB. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. And as we're staying home in the middle of this trying times, please make sure to tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB, or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. So guess what? We're doing another simulation. This was one that I got a couple of requests for, and it's one that would be interesting to go through. And I did a bunch of simulations, and man, the results of my simulations of this were pretty consistent. So let's take a look-see. In 2001, the Seattle Mariners put together one of the great regular seasons of all time, going 116-46. It was a spectacular job of managing by Lou Piniella, especially when you consider that in 1998, he lost Randy Johnson. After 1999, he lost Ken Griffey Jr. After 2000, he lost Alex Rodriguez. He had three Hall of Fame generational talents on his team all walk out. And what was the result? The greatest Mariner team of them all, 116 wins, led by Ichiro Suzuki, who won the MVP that year. But Brett Boone was no slouch. Neither was Mike Cameron. They didn't have the Griffey or the A-Rod in the middle of the lineup. They just had an incredibly deep, consistent lineup. They no longer had the superstar like Randy Johnson leading the rotation, but Freddie Garcia, who was acquired in the deal for Randy Johnson, did a pretty good job as an ace, pitched 238 and two-thirds innings to an ERA of 3.05 in the middle of the steroid era. Aaron Seeley, Jamie Moyer, and Paul Abbott, for that matter, all had solid seasons, and Kaz Sasaki was a good, if not great, reliever for them that year. Arthur Rhodes did a fine job, and the team had incredible depth and obviously didn't really fall into much of a slump. And with that, they went into the postseason. They snuck past the Cleveland Indians, who gave them a run for their money in the division series, before facing off the three-time defending World Series champion New York Yankees. And it looked like they were going to be the team that would finally beat that Yankee squad. And instead, the Yankee squad beat them in five games. The final game was actually kind of a blowout, which was stunning. The Yankees had a couple of close victories in the ALCS in Seattle. They won with a walk-off home run by Alfonso Soriano in Game 4. Now, the result of this was the Yankees, in the specter of September 11th, put together one of the most exciting and dramatic runs in baseball history, winning the series against the A's, where they were down 2-0, upsetting the Mariners, and then facing off with the Diamondbacks in what would ultimately become one of the greatest World Series in baseball history. Now, for fans like me who hated the Yankees, it was absolutely agonizing. But the result were spectacular games, especially the extra innings classics, where the Yankees, down to their final out, hit game-tying home runs with two outs of the ninth inning in games 4 and 5, and then the game 7 spectacular, where the unthinkable happened. Mariano Rivera blew the save, and the Diamondbacks won 3-2. Now, you would think I would not want to touch that. a great classic World Series, the September 11th backdrop, and the ending that was delicious for Yankee haters. But I am going to touch that right now because that Mariners squad is fascinating. And the Mariners haven't made it back to the playoffs since that year. And you can't help but wonder what would have happened if that 116-win Mariner team went on to face the D-backs in that World Series. Now, the Diamondbacks had a very specific plan for winning, and that they rode this plan all the way to the end, which was hand the ball to Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling. And as long as they win their games, they're in good shape. They snuck past the Cardinals in the Division Series with a couple of complete game victories by Curt Schilling. Randy Johnson won a pair of games in the NLCS against the Braves. And in the real-life World Series, the Diamondbacks won starts by Schilling in games 1 and 4 and starts by Randy Johnson in games 2 and 6. It was a pretty reliable formula. How would that formula work against the Mariners? Well, I used whatifsports.com and I put together a simulation, put together lineups that matched the lineups that they used in the postseason, matched up a rotation the way that they would have the rotation based in the playoffs, also taking into account if the Mariners had beaten the Yankees in 7 games. And here we go. We will pretty soon, after we do this, replay and tell you the results of the 2001 World Series that would have been Seattle versus Arizona. So get your food out. Get ready for this. And if you want to support your local businesses in the middle of this global crisis, use Postmates. Postmates will deliver from your local restaurants and bring it right to your door. And not just do grocery delivery, they can do convenience store deliveries, do all the trips that you shouldn't be doing right now. Rely on Postmates to get what you need to support your local businesses and stay safe. Just download the Postmates app on iOS or Android, find your favorites, get anything you want delivered within the hour for a limited time. Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit on your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the code LOCKEDON. That's code LOCKEDON for $100 of free delivery with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days. When you download the Postmates app, anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. All right, we go to the World Series, which opens in Arizona. Now, this is historic for several reasons. First of all, this would be the first time the World Series was played between two teams that were expansion teams. Now, in reality, that has happened in 2015 when the Royals and the Mets faced off, and it happened the last World Series with the Astros and the Nationals faced off. But it would have been the first time ever in 2001. It also would have been the first time since 1980 that two teams that had never won the World Series had faced off. In 1980, the Phillies and the Royals faced off to play in the World Series. It also would have been the first time since 1906 that two teams that had never been in the World Series had played in the World Series. That's a long time going. So, what would have happened if these two teams had faced off in the World Series? Let's go to Game 1. Game 1 is in Arizona. And Bank One Ballpark was going nuts. The Game 1 matchup was Aaron Seeley versus Curt Schilling. The Mariners were desperate to win one of the games started by Schilling or Johnson in Arizona to take control of the series. And got the scoring done first in the fourth inning when Brett Boone homered off of Schilling to break a nothing-nothing tie. Seeley was absolutely handcuffing the Arizona Diamondbacks, allowing 2 hits and no runs through 6. But in the 7th, an infield single by Steve Finley and a double by Matt Williams tied the game. That also meant that Schilling was out of the game when they tried to take the lead and bring in pinch hitter Aurelio Durazo. It didn't work. Greg Swindell got out of a jam in the 8th. Arthur Rhodes got out of a jam in the 9th. And both teams brought in their closers for the 9th. Byung-Hyun Kim threw a 1-2-3 9th. Kaz Sasaki worked around a walk to get the game into extra innings. In the 10th, Troy Brohan came out of the bullpen And with one out, Bell singled, pinch hitter Jay Buhner got a ground rule double, and Ichiro Suzuki hit a ground rule double to right field, scoring Bell and Buhner to give the Mariners a 3-1 lead. Norm Charlton, who had been part of the Nasty Boys for Lou Piniella's Reds back in 1990, came out of the bullpen and got the save. The Mariners win game one. Suddenly, the Diamondbacks' plan of winning all the Schilling and Johnson games was thrown out the window. If the Mariners took a 2-0 lead back to Seattle, winning both the Johnson and Schilling start, there would be no hope for Arizona. Jamie Moyer, the pitcher for the Mariners, threw soft. Randy Johnson, the pitcher for the Diamondbacks, threw like fire, and it made for an interesting matchup. Bautista hit a ground ball back to the pitcher, and the close play at home plate gave the Diamondbacks an early 1-0 lead. Mark McLemore singled home Carlos Guillen to make it 1-1. The score remained 1-1 until the sixth inning, when Bautista again doubled, this time scoring Greg Colburn from first to give Arizona a 2-1 lead. And at that point, it was all Randy Johnson. He got out of a jam in the seventh, worked around an Edgar Martinez walk in the eighth, worked around a McLemore single in the ninth, and Johnson, in his first World Series start, went the distance, striking out 12, allowing only one run. The Diamondbacks held on for the 2-1 victory and sent the series to Seattle. For the first time in their history, a World Series game was being played in the Pacific Northwest, and the Diamondbacks had to cross their fingers. Freddy Garcia, who the Mariners had acquired for Randy Johnson, was on the hill for Seattle. The Diamondbacks had to rely on a pitcher other than Schilling or Johnson to get a win and get the home field advantage back and get a real chance in this World Series. Was Brian Anderson up for the challenge? The answer to that question was no. He didn't get out of the first inning. Ichiro got an infield single, stole second, made it to third, and scored on a Cameron RBI single. Then Olerud got an RBI single. Then, with the bases loaded, Wilson cleared the bases. It was 5-0 in the first. Anderson lifted. Bobby Witt came in to pitch. Now, Witt and Miguel Bautista, who was another possibility to start that game, managed to keep the damage at a minimum. They wound up allowing an RBI double to Edgar Martinez, and Stan Javier drove in a run, but the 5 runs in the first was all Freddy Garcia needed. Freddy Garcia tossed a one-hit shutout, and the final was 8-0. The Mariners were in control. Realizing that the World Series could be slipping away super fast, manager Bob Brenly decided to roll the dice and pitch Curt Schilling on short rest. There was no way he was going to rely on Bautista, who he had used out of the bullpen in Game 3, or Albie Lopez to pitch Game 4 and put them in a 3-1 hole. Schilling got the ball. Paul Abbott, who had pitched surprisingly well in real life against the Yankees, was on the hill for the Mariners. And as it was, it turned into a pitcher's duel very early. After 3 innings, it was no score, and the Mariners had not gotten a hit. Schilling was dealing. Durazo of the Diamondbacks homered to give the Diamondbacks a 1-0 lead. The no-hitter was broken in the fourth, but Schilling was still in command. It was 1-0. In the fifth, Schilling worked around a Matt Williams error to keep the game at 1-0. In the sixth inning, Wilson flew out, but then Ichiro bunted his way on and scored on a Boone double. It was 1-1. The Diamondbacks could not afford to fall behind, but Abbott continued to pitch well, holding the Diamondbacks to a 1-2-3 seventh inning. And then in the seventh, Schilling came out, allowed a double to John Olerud, and Stan Javier, the wily veteran, came up and launched a home run into the left field stands. Seattle was going bananas, and Abbott was up to the task. In the eighth inning, he allowed two walks to Gonzalez and one to Durazo, but Matt Williams hit into a double play. Curt Schilling still was pitching well, save for that home run, worked around a error and got Edgar Martinez to hit into a double play. But Sasaki came in to relieve Paul Abbott, got a 1-2-3 ninth, and the Mariners won the game 3-1. They had won both of the Schilling starts and now had a commanding 3-game-to-1 lead. It was disastrous for the Diamondbacks, which had one other thing to keep in mind. At that point, Luis Gonzalez, their biggest slugger, was hitless in Game 1, hitless in Game 2, hitless in Game 3, and hitless in Game 4. He had picked up a couple of walks along the way, but their main source of power was batting zero. Miller, Grace, Sanders, and Gonzalez combined for one hit. The Diamondbacks' offense was non-existent. Now, the Mariners, in front of an absolutely frenzied crowd, had a chance to win the World Series. And they were going to do so facing their former superstar, Randy Johnson. Brenly had no choice. He had to start Johnson and could not afford to take him out and trust anyone else. The bats had to do something, as Schilling had pitched well, but got the loss. Aaron Seeley, once again, took the hill. Seeley worked around a leadoff single by Craig Counsell to pitch a scoreless first. Johnson pitched a scoreless first, second, third, fourth, fifth. In the sixth inning, a single by Stan Javier and another single by Bell and an error allowed the Mariners to take an early 1-0 lead. In the sixth inning, they had control. Could they beat Johnson and Schilling? The game went to the ninth inning. The Mariners were winning 1-0. Johnson had pitched superbly, but had the one run that he had allowed, and that could have been enough. Aaron Seeley was on the mound, ready to close the game and the series. Reggie Sanders, still hitless in the entire series, grounded out. Up stepped Luis Gonzalez, who had been hitless and become the GOAT of the entire Diamondbacks team, and the Mariners two outs away from winning the World Series. And Gonzalez got his first hit of the entire series, and it was a massive home run into the upper deck to tie the game at 1-1. With the team two outs away from elimination, Gonzalez saved potentially the game and the series. In the bottom of the ninth, no reason to take out Randy Johnson, even though he allowed a leadoff walk to Edgar Martinez. Gibson came in as a pinch runner, representing the World Series title, but Johnson got the next three batters, Olrud and Javier and David Bell, to get out of the inning. He worked around a Guillen double in the 10th, and Seeley pitched a scoreless 10th. Both starting pitchers were pitching into extra innings. Seeley came out and pitched the 11th. He got a 1-2-3 11th. Outstepped Randy Johnson. He pitched, working around a walk to John Olrud, and pitched a scoreless 11th inning, with each pitch potentially clinching the World Series for the Mariners. In the 12th, Lou Piniella figured, okay, that's enough out of Seeley, and he gave the ball to his closer, Sasaki. He got the first two batters out, but then hit Matt Williams with a pitch, and Mark Grace doubled to right field, scoring Williams. Tony Womack followed that up with a single to score Grace, and the Diamondbacks had a 3-1 lead. Brenly rolled the dice. Was he going to pitch Randy Johnson for a 12th inning or bring in his closer? He decided 11 innings was enough for Randy Johnson, and in came Byung-Young Kim with a 3-1 lead. He allowed a line drive out to David Bell and got Guillen and Wilson to ground out. The Diamondbacks, led by 11 innings pitched by Randy Johnson, held on and forced a Game 6. The series was going to go back to Arizona. It was one of the greatest pitching performances in World Series history that came after Randy Johnson's 9-inning, 12-strikeout performance in Game 2. Now, there was no way they could pitch Johnson in Game 6. There was no way they could throw Schilling in Game 6. They had to rely on another pitcher for Game 6. And every pitcher had to throw and somehow keep the Mariners from scoring and force a Game 7, which they would hand the ball to Schilling to and have Johnson ready to go. So Brenly trusted Albie Lopez, remembering that Anderson couldn't get out of the first inning. Lopez, who had made a start in the division series and in the NLCS, got the start in Game 6. Lopez pitched a scoreless first, as did Jamie Moyer. Lopez pitched a scoreless second, as did Jamie Moyer. In the third, Lopez allowed a triple to Ichiro Suzuki to give the Mariners a 1-0 lead. Moyer threw a shutout inning in the third. Lopez loaded the bases in the fourth, but got Jamie Moyer to strike out with the bases loaded and preserve the 1-0 lead. In the fifth, the Mariners got to Albie Lopez. An error, a pair of singles, a walk, and a couple of sacrifices, and a 1-0 lead turned into a 4-0 Seattle lead. In the sixth inning, Mike Cameron singled, and when John Olerud hit a 3-run home run, it was all over. The Mariners had a 9-0 lead. Jamie Moyer pitched a 1-2-3-6, worked around a single in the seventh, pitched a 1-2-3-8. In a series dominated by pitching, the soft-tossing veteran Moyer came out to pitch the ninth inning. He faced Tony Womack, who he grounded out. Jay Bell pinch hit and hit a deep drive to right field. And Luis Gonzalez, who had been hitless except for that game-tying home run, grounded out. The final score was 9-0 Seattle. The Arizona crowd was devastated that they couldn't pull the win off and were absolutely blown out at home. And the Seattle Mariners won the World Series. Ichiro Suzuki went 3-for-5 in the finale, got the huge triple to be one of the clutch moments of the entire series. Jamie Moyer pitched the complete game shutout and was the man on the mound when they won and had the giant pile. It was a series absolutely dominated by pitching. Complete games by Schilling, a complete game by Johnson, 11 innings pitched by both Johnson and Seeley, a complete game shutout by Garcia, a complete game shutout by Moyer, and ERAs under 1 for almost every starter, except Schilling, whose ERA was just over 2, and Anderson, whose ERA we shall not calculate. If we were just going to give the World Series MVP to a player on the winning team, it would have to be Moyer, who pitched excellent in Game 2, even though he got the tough luck loss, and then pitched the complete game shutout to clinch the World Series. But it would have to go to Randy Johnson to become the first World Series MVP for a losing team since Bobby Richardson did it in 1960. There would be no way you could deny someone who pitched 20 innings to an ERA of 0.90, striking out 20 batters, basically averaging 10 innings a start. You couldn't deny him that. And the great irony that the Mariners would win the World Series after losing their three massive superstars and have the World Series MVP be one of those superstars who walked would have been the clinching moment of Lou Piniella, who would have added a Seattle World Series title along with a Cincinnati World Series title and joined Sparky Anderson as a manager who won the World Series in both leagues. Later, Tony La Russa would do that with the St. Louis Cardinals. I ran a bunch of these simulations, and almost every single time, the Mariners were winning, no matter what. And each simulation also had Randy Johnson, who, along with Curt Schilling, were the real-life World Series MVPs in 2001, dominating. So, that's what you missed out on, Seattle. You missed out on a couple of great games and a couple of blowouts and a series dominated by pitching, and one that Luis Gonzalez was held to a single hit, albeit a super dramatic hit, with the team down to its final two outs. So that's my simulation. If you want me to replay any World Series or any other series, let me know. I'm working on one, which I know Cubs fan with an eight wants to hear, which is the Pirates advancing beyond the 2015 wildcard game. So check us out on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available on all the platforms you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at LockedOnMLB_net. And I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Replaying the 2001 World Series, this is the Locked On MLB Podcast for the 11th day of April 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.